How to keep farmers and the planet happy. Farmers have been protesting in several European countries and in Brussels these last few weeks. Low revenues, environmental regulations, international competition, social recognition, the agricultural business model, which is both at the heart of climate change and facing its impacts, does not seem to work anymore. How can sustainable consumption practices address agricultural and environmental challenges? Is it possible, and if so, how to bring systemic change in the food chain? This is what we are discussing in today's podcast, the third of our series under the branding of European States of Mind Reinventing the Deal, in French, L'Union dans tous ses états, réinventer le deal. Today we have two Dutch experts to tell us more about the nitrogen crisis, azote in French. To talk about it with me, we have Dan Boozman and Henk Vestok. Hello and welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for accepting our invitation. And you both work at PBL, the Netherlands Environmental Assessment Agency. Henk, you are the program manager of the Department of Water, Agriculture and Food. You worked on Farm to Fork at its beginning as an expert in the European Commission for 2 years. And then you work also at PBL as a senior policy analyst in the same program. And together you authored a blog that has just been published for IDRI. An excess of nitrogen produced by agricultural practices, mainly livestock farming, has negative effects on soil, water, air, and biodiversity. A decision to divide by half nitrogen in the Netherlands led to an intense and long political crisis. So let me start with a question for you, Dan. Could you explain the key aspects of the nitrogen crisis in the Netherlands with some historical perspective, if possible?
What we see in the news today is obviously these farmers' protests throughout Europe. And if you look at the Netherlands, it was a country where we saw farmers protest quite early as 2019, 2020. And the main issue was what is called the nitrogen crisis in the Netherlands. So it's not so much about income per se or about changing things in the common agricultural policy or something like that. It's a rather domestic issue about deposition, so the emissions of ammonia and deposition on Nature 2000 areas, and the deposition of nitrogen via the air leads to eutrophication of those areas. So the Netherlands is of course, a densely populated country, and it has among the highest livestock densities of Europe. So you should realize that the Netherlands in the most dense livestock areas in the top 10, five of them are Dutch and three of them are Flemish and two of them are close to the border in Germany. So it's really a hotspot of livestock in Europe. So emissions of ammonia, they come from stables, of course, and also from spreading of manure in the field. But what this nitrogen crisis, what it really triggered is that the deposition of nitrogen gives risks to nature. And those risks to nature are to be addressed for the Habitat Directive allows you only to allow new activities that cause risk to nature through 1,000 areas, if you can mitigate those risks or that you can at least show that there will be no harm. Because in the Netherlands, those emissions of nitrogen are so high via the air, it is very hard to say that it will not cause any risks to nature. And so we have really the exceedance of what is in science called the critical load for nitrogen, and those are exceeded in the Netherlands. They're also exceeded elsewhere. So in Germany, in parts of France, especially in the Po region, in Italy or in Catalonia, and in northwestern Europe, where the Netherlands is situated. What really triggered the crisis was that the highest Dutch court, Council of State, after asking questions to the European Court of Justice, is the system that the Netherlands has for allowing new permits to start and new activities that cause an only very tiny bit of emissions of ammonia, is that allowed, yes or no? And the Council of State ruled that the Dutch system was not in line with the Habitats Directive. And so even the smallest bit of nitrogen cannot be added extra to those areas. And that really caused crisis in Dutch agriculture, because construction could not proceed anymore. New industrial activities could not proceed anymore. And also new farmers could not expand their farms anymore. So that resulted in new kinds of regulations and new kinds of ambitions to lower those emissions of ammonia, de facto limiting the environmental space. So the total amount of ammonia that can be emitted as a country as a whole is now diminished. So space is decreased. And that led for farmers for new kind of buyout programs or the threat of new regulations for spreading manure, for building new stables, all these kinds of things. And that entered the nitrogen crisis when politicians said we should halve the Dutch livestock size. And ever since, we are in a nitrogen crisis in the Netherlands, which has not been resolved thus far.
And you mentioned the European Courts of Justice in this context. Could you tell us the broader implications of its ruling on nitrogen in the Netherlands? Does it have impact on the environmental regulations or on the agricultural practices across the EU?
Basically, it made a ruling on how to interpret the precautionary principle and how to determine whether there is a risk or there is no risk. So currently, in the Netherlands, the interpretation is such a way that any extra deposition of nitrogen is interpreted as an extra risk if the critical loads are already exceeded. And the Flemish government has followed stock. So the Flemish Council of State also said, well, the interpretation that we have is not in line with how the European Court of Justice interprets the precautionary principle of the Habitats Directive. So there used to be kind of thresholds where you say, okay, this is such a small amount of extra emissions, there is no harm. But the European Court of Justice says in its jurisprudence, says, well, lots of tiny bits are also a lot. And that's, of course, with diffuse pollution always. So if all those tiny bits also make a lot and also cause a risk as a total, then it's very hard to say scientifically that only a small amount extra is no risk. But currently, if you look at the French case or the German case, there is still a threshold which says, okay, if you're below that level of extra emissions, it's not a problem. It's a very big issue in order to allow.
Thank you very much for giving us all of this information on the Dutch context. And now I turn to you, Henk. A question that you could answer perhaps is, in what ways do the agricultural policies and practices in the Netherlands reflect broader trends and tensions within the European Union? I mean, regarding sustainability, rural development, or agricultural intensification, for instance.
Yes, thank you, Eloise. Well, I think for agricultural practices, one can distinguish two contrasting developments, which we see in the Netherlands, but also in other member states. The first is a continued process of upscaling in farm size. So the number of farms is actually decreasing, but most of the land and the animal production rights are being purchased by the remaining farms. And this results in an increase in farm size. This is a way for farmers of being able to produce at lower costs. But in principle, it does not lead to lower actual emissions to the environment or to more sustainable production practices. The second development we see amongst farmers is in the enterprises. Considerable number of them are choosing for an alternative trajectory, with, for example, higher animal welfare or more emphasis on agri-environmental schemes and payments or for organic production. But also in some cases, farmers are able to combine both developments. So upscaling on one hand and at the other hand, being able to produce more in a sustainable way. And when we look at agricultural policies, we see high political ambitions, for example, to reduce nitrogen emissions, where my colleague Dan was talking about, or to reduce greenhouse gas emissions from farms. And these ambitions are often supported by a large majority in parliament. We have also seen the same thing in European Parliament. But when it comes to actually implementing these measures, which are needed to actually reduce these emissions, we see major difficulties and resistance. In our view, there are two main causes for this. The first is only when the actual measures become clear to society and to farmers, they see what it actually means for their farm practices, And then the resistance is increasing towards these measures and also towards the fact of the need to reduce the emissions. And this leads to, of course, to the big farmers' protest we have seen over the last week. And the second cause why we see this difficult translation of these high ambitions into actual practices is because governments often lack the institutional capacity to actually implement and develop effective measures. So this is two examples of trends and tensions we see over the last years.
Thank you. And another question for you, Henk, and we have to mention it, the common agricultural policy that shapes the environmental and agricultural policies in EU member states. It is frequently reformed, and the last time was in 2021, implemented just 1 year ago. So how might this common agricultural policy reforms influence the resolution of the nitrogen-related challenges that you are facing in the Netherlands?
Yes, thank you. Well, I'd like to take a little bit broader perspective on not only looking at nitrogen, but also on other environmental issues, like, for example, greenhouse gas emissions or biodiversity. But we do not expect the new common agriculture policy to be a real game changer. I think it will largely maintain the status quo. Well, maybe there will be some effect of the eco schemes to contribute to reduce greenhouse gas emissions and also to increase biodiversity through better land management. We do not expect a really large effect of these eco schemes. And as for nitrogen, well, of course, a lot of nitrogen is coming from intensive livestock operations, and these livestock operations are hardly included in the common agriculture policy. So we do not expect a big effect on nitrogen-related challenges either.
Building on that and back to you, Dan, do you agree that the Dutch nitrogen crisis is a symptom of larger structural issues within the European agricultural sector? For example, the issues of intensive livestock farming, land use management, and environmental sustainability.
The targets for reducing not only nitrogen emissions or to improve water quality, to improve the quality of our land nature by a deposition or to lower the impacts of pesticides for biodiversity means, but also in climate regulation, so the effort sharing regulation, if those goals are becoming ever more tight, so the amount of space, emission space for agriculture will decrease. And at least in the Netherlands, you see also competition between the different sectors of the carbon budget, for instance. So if Dutch livestock farming, which is quite a big emitter of greenhouse gases, if that sector doesn't reduce its emissions, then immediately other sectors within the effort sharing regulation have to do more. So you see also pressures from other economic sectors on agriculture to deliver on their share. Those intensive livestock farming, as we have in the Netherlands, it's not compatible with meeting the objectives for climate change and for biodiversity conservation. That big livestock sector is becoming ever more controversial. For instance, the emissions of nitrogen in the transportation or industry sector are decreasing. Livestock farming is not in the Netherlands, but pretty much also elsewhere. If you look at Ireland, if you look at Denmark, if you look at Belgium, you really see those pressures of reform now coming up.
And now, Henk, back to you. As I mentioned, you've worked with the European Commission on building the farm-to-fork strategy. So how do you envision the future of European agriculture? And do you think it's possible to achieve environmental sustainability goals while ensuring resilience and competitiveness?
Yes, I think it's certainly possible to improve resilience, but also to improve the sustainability of the whole food sector. And therefore, I think it's crucial to broaden the discussion and not only look at agriculture. I think this mistake which is being made right now, that people look too much only at farmers to do something. But I think it's important to look at the food system in general. It is not fair to expect a lot of action from farmers without appropriate compensation. And this compensation can come either from governments, but can also come from private actors. And this was exactly the philosophy behind the farm-to-fork strategy, that you should look at the whole food system and not only look at farmers. And companies, for example, like retailers and big food processors, can assist farmers in making this move towards more sustainable production practices. And the same actors like retailers and the food service and the restaurants can also help consumers by making the healthy and sustainable choice the easy choice. But companies, of course, cannot and will not do this by their own. So there needs to be a coherent policy to steer these actors in this direction. And I think this should be a very important element in the new Green Deal. Of course, we know that the foreseen legislative initiative in the Farm to Fork strategy has not been published, but I think it's very important that this piece of legislation will become there, and especially will have a good food system approach in order to support farmers to be more sustainable.
Is it also a matter of cross-border collaboration? And you mentioned it, but a knowledge exchange play. Hank, do you have in mind successful examples of such initiatives where there is cross-border collaboration within a European context?
Yes, I think there's a lot of cross-boundary, cross-Europe collaboration, especially on the scientific level, actually. In the scientific communities, there's been a lot of progress, both on more thematic issues like the nitrogen issue or greenhouse gas emissions, but also more on integrated issues like this, taking this food system approach. But so far, there has been limited impact on actual food system actors and governments, but also on the farmers community. So I think it's very important to translate this this collaboration on knowledge and innovation part to extend this broader.
Dan, would you also like to react on this?
If the Netherlands goes at this strategy alone, makes new regulations for farmers, that it will harm their competitive position within Europe. So if the Dutch farmers have to meet stricter standards for their stables or for the way they use manure, all kinds of domestic regulations, for that reason, it's of course problematic if we see not so much progress at the European level.
Wonderful to be part of this discussion with you both. Thank you. I think it's also very interesting for our auditors to hear you both elaborating on this. And I now have a last question as a conclusion, and it's also for the both of you, if you agree. Looking ahead, what are the key policy priorities for European policymakers or for stakeholders and researchers to effectively tackle nitrogen-related issues and promote sustainable agricultural practices?
If you look at what has to be done in order to meet our biodiversity objectives or to meet our water quality objectives, as well as we haven't discussed that the Netherlands will by far not meet the water quality standards for the Water Framework Directive, the European Water Framework Directive. Too much nitrogen is also in the water in the Netherlands. And we're really at the beginning of that effort. So it's really an issue that is here to stay for the coming decades or more.
Thank you. And Hank?
This food system approach is very important. So not only look at the agriculture sector, because then it's becoming a kind of zero-sum game in the discussion between the government and the farmers. And I think it's very important to include other actors in this discussion and also in the solutions. I think this food system approach really need to be taken on and taken further. And I think this can solve certain issues which we are confronting right now. And there's a lot of talk about food prices and increase in of the effect of environmental measures on food prices and on food security in Europe. We can effectively address these challenges and really make progress.
That's a great way to conclude. And thank you so much both for this great conversation. I remind our audience that you're both working at PBL, the Netherlands Environmental Assessment Agency, and that your full blog is accessible on the IDRIS website. And this series of podcasts, European States of Mind, Reinventing the Deal, continues in the weeks to come, so stay tuned.